Senator Dahl will be first up. Senator Dahl, welcome to the Tax Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I have in front of you Senate Files 609. And maybe before we proceed further, I have a one-word amendment that would put this bill in order.
And what would you like put on?
Page 6, line 29. Delete the number 511 and insert 475. Again, page 6, line 29. Delete the number 511 and insert 475. That change will keep it in the same language of the House. I think it eliminates another town that might be affected by the population. So,
Senator Dahl, once we have a quorum, we'll make that motion. But
okay.
Maybe you can
sure.
Walk through the bill for us.
Well, this bill, Mr. Chair, makes a request for an LGA increase for the town of Green Isle, a town in my district. And we feel that that this is a unique situation in Green Isle. I know it would be pretty difficult if every town came in here asking for increases in LGA, but we believe that there's some unique circumstances in the past year that I think makes this particular bill and this request a reasonable one. I have with me Randall Brueger, mayor of the town of Green Isle, and he'd like to talk a little bit about those circumstances.
Thank you.
Welcome, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, if I may. Brought with me today, actually, we have our whole city council along. We all made the trip.
We need your name for the tape.
Oh, sorry. It's Randall Brueger.
Thank you.
I'm the mayor of Green Isle, and like I said, I brought with me the whole city council today. We've traveled a little over 60 miles to be here because we feel that this is important to our city, and if we can bring everybody along, kind of show us how serious we are about this. Give you a brief history of Green Isle. We're approximately 130 years old. Like I said, we're about 60 miles southwest of St. Paul here. In 2001, we were the last city in Minnesota with a working wooden water tower. Since then, we've upgraded to the water tower sewer system. We've had many developments. You know, we've been a striving community. Like many other cities, we've seen our share of the foreclosures. We've seen this last year our biggest developer back out, stop paying assessments and back taxes. And then many of you may have seen on July 2nd of 2008, this previous summer, national news, we had a fire in Green Isle which destroyed approximately two city blocks. And that was our biggest commercial property in town.
Similar problem.
They are. It was 20% of our commercial tax base that was destroyed in this fire. There's plans to rebuild, but with current lawsuits going on, that's kind of taken a back right now. If you see in the handout there, you can see that our LGA as of 2008 was 35,769, slated for next year. With the governor, we will lose all of our LGA funding. And with the current situation we're in from the fire and the other situations, it's going to put us in the future here with our general fund way down. I can answer any questions you have if along the way, or if Kevin would like to add on.
Mr. Chair, I might add, I believe that during that fire as well, there was quite a cost incurred to the city, I believe. Maybe you could just elaborate, Mr. Brueger, the cost in terms of fire departments that had to show up and the bills you had to pay.
Mr. Chair, on July 2nd, we had 25 different departments in Green Isle from around the metro. We had, I believe, like City of Excelsior all the way up to Mayor, down to Henderson, up to Buffalo. We had 25 different departments there. The city incurred a cost of approximately $65,000 from the fire, and as of right now, we've only been reimbursed $1,000, which we had to pay the other $65,000 out of the general fund for now.
And And we, Mr. Chair, you might note that the handout that was given to you by the mayor here kind of summarizes their tax base and how it compares with comparable cities. It also takes a look at projected tax rates out to 2020 and projected tax, city tax impacts. And finally, it's not the first time that this particular request has been done. The last page shows perhaps 20 cities that have received special LGA increases, similar to the request that we are asking for today.
You know, Senator Dahl, did we enact all these into law, all these exceptions?
I wish.
Or just were they just proposed on behalf of members?
Mr. Chair, I wish Dave Callister could be here. Have these all been enacted into law, or were they...
Mr. Chair, if you refer to the last page here, these are all cities besides Green Isle here. This is our request, but these are cities in the past that have kind of done the same thing we've done here and have received additional LGA.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Dibble.
Mr. Chair, I better say there's some gap in my knowledge here. Is it common or customary to bill for fighting a fire? Bill the owner of a building whose building burned down for...
Senator Dibble, I believe that it is, and I think your homeowner's insurance actually will pay your deductible, if I remember right, because they don't want to discourage you from calling the fire department. Mm-hmm. So the insurance company actually, I believe, even waives your deductible in that case. Mr. Mayor?
Thank you. Mr. Chair... Senator Dibble, what we received was $1,000 was from the insurance company. The rest of the $65,000 came from cost of water, cost of hauling, different departments, and the necessities used to put that fire out.
Comfy was a tornado.
Mr. Chair, didn't we have a big debate about this up in northern Minnesota a couple years ago about that mutual aid agreements between towns or folks living outside of town and whether or not they're going to be part of the fire service protection?
That's a very sensitive issue in rural Minnesota. Fire departments are the fabric of many township governments. Mm-hmm. Senator Scoy?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Dibble, and it's getting harder to maintain that good solid relationship as the proposed aid reductions are coming down to the cities. They're proposing to raise what they charge the townships for fire service, which is causing obviously the townships to have second thoughts about the relationship. It is a real challenge. Mr. Chair, if I could, and if we're done with that discussion,
I just need to be clear. So we try to recoup our costs every time there's a fire breach incident. I'm just not familiar with that.
I don't know. Okay, raise his hand.
Can you tell us?
Mr. Chair, my name is Steve Dino. I'm also with the Green Isle Council.
Why don't you come up to the table?
Senator Dibble, we do have agreements, mutual aid agreements
we need your name and who you represent.
My name is Steve Dino. I'm from the Green Isle City Council, and I'm also a volunteer fire department. We do have mutual aid agreements with the townships and the surrounding towns close to us. We had fire trucks coming in from Chanhassen, from Glencoe, which are not in our mutual aid agreements, and therefore we have to pay the cost back to them to reimburse them.
And then you try to pass those costs on?
Correct. And most insurance policies, even homeowner policies, the fire protection, we get whatever the insurance company gives us. There is no set rates. There is, as far as insurance companies are involved, they don't pay anything to us except what they're allowed. And in most cases in homes, that's $500.
Thank you. I learned something today.
This would have been a good question for last week when all of the fire service day was here. It's worth getting an answer to, I think. Right. Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members, Senator Dahl. This list demonstrates the need that we've been working on for the last number of years to kind of reevaluate this small city formula, because it it doesn't accurately reflect what the needs are very well. We've just kind of had this grandfathered amount that we keep working along with, and so, you know, I don't know, maybe we can take another run at trying to do something with that formula, but it's extremely difficult because of the wide variability between these small communities. But I did have a question for Mayor Brugger. On this last page, you've got your actual 2009 tax rate and then the projected 10, 11, and 12. Is that the projected tax rate that you would have if this LGA increase was not to occur or is to or occur?
Mr. Chair, the senator spoke. Yeah, if you follow the back page, that's the projected if there's no LGA received. We also have, it'd be the first graph, I believe, here, is kind of where we're basing a lot of this off of. Follow the blue line there. That's the city portion of the taxes and the increased slate. You can see we're looking out to about 2013 right now where we'd reach 190%.
And then it is projected to drop off again. No, thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Pogomar.
List. Browns Valley was a flood. Cass Lake. I don't remember Cass Lake. What was that one for?
Well, we didn't have a tax bill in 2007, so it must have been done in 2006 session.
Comfrey was a tornado. Taylor's Falls, I remember that bill, but I don't remember why we did that.
State park.
There was the Taylor's Falls made the argument that they have a state park on their perimeter, and that added cost, and they didn't feel that overburden of the park was being paid for by the state. They didn't receive the PILT money. It went to the county, and that was their argument. That was Senator Olsen's bill.
War Road. I don't remember War Road. Pine Island, I don't remember. Pillager, I don't remember. Are we sure these all passed?
Mm-hmm. Well, Senator Pogomar, I think you got a good point. I think we got to look at whether they actually all passed into law.
Oh, yeah. These are in law. They're in the
council
law.
Says they did.
Monoman, I remember, was a
casino closing.
Casino closing. Coon Rapids?
I think this is instead of giving them money to build a highway interchange.
Council tells me that was in lieu of giving them some money for a highway exchange they needed, that we gave them some additional LGA. It's a pretty interesting list, all right. Do you remember why we did Red Wing?
I don't.
Or Hopkins?
We probably should check those out, huh? They probably Senate Consul thought they were a good idea.
Members, we have a quorum, so Senator Skoy moves the 0105 amendment, which just changes the population number from 511 to 475. Discussion? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
On the contrary, no. Motion prevails. Amendments adopted. Senator Dahl, anything further?
No, but I appreciate your time, and I'm sure the city of Green Isle and the residents there appreciate your consideration and what they feel is a pretty urgent need for their community for services and quality of life.
Mr. Mayor, that's a very high city tax rate.
Mm-hmm.
But if we did give you $150,000 of new LGA, that would reduce your levy to the levy in what year? And I'll just tell you, that seems like it's reducing your levy an awful lot.
Yeah, Mr. Chair. Right now, like I said, we're getting the 35-hour tax levy. I have around $400,000 this previous year.
And I see in 2003 you were at $261,000. Would it be fair to say that your levy would be reduced to some level prior to 2003?
Say that again.
Would that be accurate? Would your levy be reduced to some level prior to 2003?
Mr. Chair, I don't believe back to 2003.
I'm just looking at the last page of the handout.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, on the second page, it says that the Green Isle certified levy for 2008 was $396,000. So that would take it down to $250,000 about.
At the last page.
Yeah, I don't.
Yeah, it'd be about 2003.
Yeah, she.
Counselor?
Mr. Chairman, again, Steve Dino. In 2003, 2001, they started the whole sewer project, water tower project, new water lines, and that's where our increases have come up. Now with the fire and the developers walking away, we were asking for this to cover our losses because we're losing 20% tax base in our industrial, and all this taxes and assessments from the developer walking away is what we're going to lose, and we're going to have to pass those on to the local people that are living there.
The tax rate may not go down so far since they lost their biggest commercial. Tax rate might still be paid.
Any other questions, members? Chair lays over Senate File 609 as amended. Senator Dahl, Mayor, Councilor, thank you for making the drive in today.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and committee members.
Sharon, welcome to the Tax Committee.
Thank you very much. I'm here to present Senate File 493. This is a bill that modifies how the City of Mankato can use previously authorized tax revenues. The revenues to be used for building the Southern Minnesota Women's Hockey Exposition Center. And the bill currently states that this center would be attached to the Mankato Civic Center. The change that's in this bill would allow the revenue to be used for the same project, but does not require the Hockey Exposition Center to be attached to the Civic Center. Section 1 modifies the use of revenues from the local sales tax and use tax, and Section 2 modifies the use of revenues from the local food and beverage and entertainment tax. This is a request that's coming because of some options that are in front of the City of Mankato. I have the city manager, Pat Henches, with me if you would like to ask any questions.
Mr. Henches, you drove all the way in. Why don't you tell us something about what's happened?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Basically, our request is very simple. We're attempting to get this project ready for construction in 2009. We desire the removal of the language from the local option sales tax enabling legislation and the food and beverage tax legislation. During the preliminary design, as you're maybe some of you are aware, this project was a part of the bonding bill last year in terms of preliminary design. It was vetoed. We chose to move ahead with the preliminary design at a local funding level. During this period of time, we determined that our original site in its preliminary design had some constraints, basically soil corrections, building footprint problems, and an existing business that was adjacent to that was expected to expand and redevelop with the economy. That project was put on hold. Accordingly, We're looking at other site options, a site that the city owns, and possibly another site near the campus of Minnesota State University as a possible location for this, and we'd desire to make that decision very quickly, so potentially we could take advantage of a 2009 construction schedule.
Does the project cost the same amount of money when you move it?
Actually, Mr. Chair, we could potentially do a better product, essentially accommodating some desires that Minnesota State has with the move. We did, with those building constraints, some of those options were eliminated.
Any questions, members? Chair lays over Senate File 493 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Mr. Henchies, thank you for coming down. Senator Sharon, thank you. Senator Day.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members. This is basically a proposal by the City of Owatonna to seek a special legislation to transfer some sales and use tax proceeds for the construction of a street that's happening in 2010. And we do have a handout here, Mr. Chairman. And along with me today, I have the city administrator and also the economic development director. And I don't know. Maybe explain.
Sure. Thank you for your time. What we have is a very straightforward request.
We need your name.
Oh, I'm sorry. My name is Chris Posey. I'm the city administrator for the city of Owatonna.
Welcome.
Thank you. As I said, this is a straightforward request to shift our sales tax dollars from Alexander Drive to 18th Street Southwest. In your packet that you have there is a map that's included. Simply moves the street about a half mile to the south. Our recent development and traffic patterns now clearly indicate that this is a need for this shift. We've garnered support from the county board, from the township board, from our Chamber of Commerce. Those resolutions of support are also in your packet, and also MnDOT. We've had a public hearing on this issue as well. And we've gotten no negative comments on this shift. And Dave Strand, my community development director, could also answer any detailed questions.
What work is not going to get done now when this money's moved to another project?
We're simply going to construct a different street.
The previous one's not going to be done at all?
As development allows or requires. I don't know, Dave, if you have anything to add.
My name is Dave Strand, Community Development Director with the City of Owatonna. Mr. Chair, the intention would be to build Alexander Street as the property adjacent to it develops. So it'll be a kind of a normal development process, whereas the sales tax will allow us to accelerate the reconstruction of an existing street. It's now a town road, and will allow us to build that first. The proximity of that township road is closer to the new interchange with Trunk Highway 14, and it's, as was noted before, the traffic patterns and things, development has shifted, so there's going to be a far greater burden on that township road now than there was previously determined. So we feel that's important to be able to reconstruct that road first, get that in place, and then Alexander Street could be built at a much later date as development warrants.
So, Mr. Strand, I'm just curious, what percentage of the sales tax collected in Owatonna comes out of the Cabela's store? Do we have any ideas?
A lot. Mr. Chairman, a lot.
The majority? Would it be fair to say the majority?
The majority. It was, maybe one of the dumbest statements I ever made when I was to the individual that developed it, a fellow by the name of Buzz Kaplan, who was, really good friends of the Cabela's. And arriving back in Owatonna, I said, Buzz, you really think this will work? Owatonna, and he's a multimillionaire, and I have like $48 to my name. And he was right, because we had about 3.7 million visitors, second to the Mall of America. Now, there are more stores around, so it's went down a little since Rogers and East Grand Forks and such. But anyway, it's
Senator Day, I've made my contribution to your street reconstruction.
Senator Bach, I realize that. I know
but
that.
But just say thanks.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you. Appreciate it.
Senator Langseth?
I'm aware of the East Grand Forks one. And, of course, Grand Forks is a city of 40-some thousand people right across the river, but it pulls an awful lot of people from Winnipeg down to East Grand Forks. So that one is very successful as well.
Senator Senjum, have you made any contribution to the Owatonna Street Project?
Mr. Chair and members, yeah, the as recently as last weekend, yes. Mr. Chair, I would also offer, and obviously Senator Day and the witnesses know a lot more about Owatonna than I do, but if you look at this map in their packet, one only needs to drive Highway 14 to Waseca going through Owatonna to know that that west side is really seems to be developing, and so I can certainly understand their need here.
And have all the bonds been issued?
Yes.
Any other questions, members? Senator Day, thank you. Chair Lazor, over Senate File 322.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. And I also would like to go on the record that I really support your next bill, 832, because I have some large printing companies in my Senate district, and that would really, really help them. And
Senator Day, the chair likes your bill, too.
Okay. Thank you.
Members, we've got Senate File 832 in front of us, and I've got some witnesses that want to come and testify on this. But what this, and we've got an amendment that we probably need to get on it before we get too far down the road here. It's the A1 amendment. Just kind of gets the bill in shape so that it works. So members, if we can get the bill in shape, then the we will speak to the bill as amended. Senator Skoy moves to A1. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Contrary, no. Motion prevails. A1 is adopted. Members, what this is a bill that relates to the collection of sales tax when a Minnesota printer never takes ownership of paper. Oftentimes, they'll get a contract with some out-of-state company. The out-of-state company will have the paper shipped directly to the printer, and then the printer simply puts the ink on it and then sends it wherever the person they had the contract with wants it sent. So the printer never takes ownership of the paper. It's purchased by the person they have a contract with to do the printing. And apparently there's a question about whether that transaction should be subject to Minnesota sales tax, the purchase of the paper. And there are large companies that seek out printing services that have been reluctant to do some business with Minnesota printers for fear that they are going to, at some point in time after the fact, be subjected to Minnesota sales tax on the purchase of the paper. Even though they have no nexus with us, they have no physical premises here, they have no property or payroll here, but there is some thought that we're actually losing printing business in Minnesota because of the uncertainty about whether we should be subjecting that paper purchase to sales tax. So this just makes it clear that if the company that is contracting with a Minnesota printer, if that company is from outside the state, does not have nexus with Minnesota, that because the printer is only taking possession of the paper long enough to do the printing, that paper is not subject to sales tax in Minnesota. And it doesn't score at any cost because Currently, we're not subjecting that transaction to sales tax. So I think, did I explain this accurately?
You're yes, pretty close. Right on the money.
Right, pretty close is not right on the money.
All right, I'll state it. You're right on the money.
So, Mr. Raji, or
yes.
who would like to start?
I will. Mr. Chair, good morning, members of the committee. My name is David Raji. I am the president and CEO of the printing industry of Minnesota. PIM is a trade association representing print, paper, ink, equipment manufacturers across the state of Minnesota. Approximately 30,000 people in Minnesota work in the print industry. As an industry, we import 45% to 50% of our work from states and other countries. It comes to this state and gets printed and sent back to their locations. We have a problem here. Other states have fixed it. And because we haven't addressed this situation, we are at a competitive disadvantage with other states. Today, large, sophisticated print buyers avoid Minnesota because of the exposure that this tax issue has for them. We appreciate the cooperation that we've seen from the Department of Revenue in working with our industry on this. We've had multiple meetings with both the commissioner and his staff in the past several months explaining where we're at and making awareness of it and their interest in helping us solve the problem. Everyone we spoke with at the department has been understanding and helpful and in seeking to work with the industry to solve this problem. Today I have with me the pleasure of introducing two individuals that would like to speak in favor of this Senate File 832, Mike Amundson from Brown Printing and Fred Thigpen from R.R. Donnelly. Mike?
Good morning. I'm Mike Amundson. I'm the CFO, Chief Financial Officer of Brown Printing Company located in Waseca, Minnesota. Our company is 52 years old and employs about 1,100 people in Minnesota, and we're a full-service printer for large publications and companies throughout the country. This change is needed for Minnesota printers to level the playing field because printers located in other states have exemptions from this nexus requirement. Some of the other states that have the exemption include Wisconsin, Illinois, Pennsylvania, and Ohio. So all a publisher or purchaser of printing needs to do is to move to another state to avoid the nexus issue. I have on my desk, as we speak, a request for proposal from a company. It's a large publisher. It's a request for proposal that would result in a five-year contract with annual print revenues in excess of $50 million. This is a company that previously printed in Minnesota and exited the state when it was determined that the paper that they had on the printer's floor created a nexus. They have told us that they will not award any portion of this contract to a printer located in Minnesota unless this exception is passed. I think it's important for us to understand that the printing industry isn't the only one who's really affected by this. The paper industry is affected as well. Our Waseca plant last year consumed 40 million pounds of paper purchased from paper mills in Minnesota. I think it's fair to assume that if a Minnesota printer is awarded a portion of this contract, it's likely that the paper, a portion of that paper will come from mills that generate the paper in Minnesota. These are difficult economic times. We've unfortunately been in a situation where we had to lay off 100 people in Waseca. The business is tough out there. It's competitive. And if we're at a competitive disadvantage, that makes it all the more difficult for us to succeed. It's important for us to have this bill passed as soon as possible so that we can generate additional work, fill the plants, and create job opportunities. I firmly believe that if this bill is passed, the state will see a revenue increase, and the increase will come from payroll, sales, and income taxes paid by both the printers and the employees hired to take on these new responsibilities. Thank you for your time, and I'd be happy to entertain any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Robinson.
Well, good morning. My name is Fred Thigpen, and I'm Vice President Plant Manager of the Maple Grove Facility for R.R. Donnelly. R.R. Donnelly has been in business since 1864 and in Maple Grove for a little over 20 years. And as a whole, our Donnelly, with several other facilities and sites other than Maple Grove, employs over 2,000 Minnesotans. And along with that, we provide a lot of services, print, pre-media, creative design, binding, mailing, and logistics. Currently entertaining having our logistics in Rogers, and weighing in the balance is what we're talking about today. Senator Bach, I want to thank you very much for allowing me the time to address this tax committee on something that is so important to us. This 832 bill is really and truly putting us in a position where we cannot compete with not only the facilities that are of other companies, but R.R. Donnelly has like facilities just like ours in Maple Grove across the United States. Moving this is just a matter of taking the work, picking it up, and moving it away from Minnesotans to another facility without a loss of revenue to R.R. Donnelly, other than moving the paper and the shutdown of a facility. This is a tough economic time, and I've got a family of folks that work for us in Maple Grove. Most of them yesterday came in the office to cheer me on with enthusiasm about what we are about to deliver today, and they're asking for your support. And I would say that us as servant leaders to these folks, we need to take a look at it and see what we can do for the fellow Minnesotans that support us, both in what we do as governing leaders and otherwise. I would confirm that there is a minimum of at least $100 million of business that could go away, and that doesn't count any other printer other than R.R. Donnelly, which was stated in the PIM and the document that was submitted. These are tough times. I've got a bunch of folks that are really counting on us and want to stay as Minnesotans, as printers in this state. I would ask that you take in consideration for rapidly looking at this and making sure that we don't have any other lost revenue or potential lost revenue. I have 25 examples of customers that we went on a limb and we sent copies to. 24 out of the 25 responded within 24 hours to us that if the Nexus is part of their bill, that they would not pay the bill, and they would look to print otherwise in other states other than Minnesota. Thank you very much for taking a few minutes to listen to us, and happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Mr. Chair?
Certainly, sir.
Have we actually ever collected any money here?
Well, the department scored it as a zero.
Yeah, so apparently they haven't collected it. So.
There's no loss, but I think the fear is that the fact that this paper may create tax nexus is causing some concern to people who would have Minnesota printers do their work, that it could create tax nexus and they could incur some liability in the future, even though there hasn't been. Nobody wants that outstanding liability, I guess.
Well, Mr. Chair, it leaves no hole, is what it amounts to in this particular year. Right. That's important. So it's kind of a win-win, I guess.
Senator Dibble?
But otherwise, when we get our print, I guess I've never looked that closely at my printing bill. When we get our printing done and the printer supplies the paper, we pay tax on that paper. Is that true?
It is part of a... Absolutely. If you purchase something where it is purchased, yes. But there is no nexus tax that would be applied to the paper.
I think the point is that all we're really doing is a Minnesota company doesn't own the paper.
We don't own it.
And they're simply performing a service on the paper provided by some out-of-state company. Is that correct?
Yes, that's exactly right.
I guess just to characterize it correctly, there's a very large printing facility that we're probably all familiar with down in Wisconsin, and all these publishers need to do is go to Wisconsin and get the same service, because Wisconsin has a specific exemption dealing with printer's paper or customer-owned paper on the printer's floor. it's that specific.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Dibble.
This won't hurt us in having customers, incenting customers to buy their, this won't hurt our paper industry, will it, incenting customers to go buy their paper and then bring it elsewhere and bring it to Minnesota printers, creating unintended consequence?
Well, let me just make a guess. I mean, I would think that Minnesota paper is in the supply chain, do you want to purchase? Paper is a heavy commodity. Is there some advantage to a printer being located relatively close to a paper mill?
Yes, the cost of transportation is very high in the supply chain of delivering paper, so it is important to have it as a close supplier. But also the rules regarding sales tax on paper are specific to what the paper is used for in its ultimate sale. So there's the issue as to whether we have to charge sales tax to our customers when we ultimately sell to them, and it really depends on what the use of the paper is for. It's my understanding that periodicals are handled different than other types of printing, and periodicals are exempt from sales tax. So it really has to do with the end use of the product and how we're required to remit sales tax. If we purchase the paper, we are reselling it. So we have a resale certificate with the paper mill. We're subject to withhold and collect sales tax when the situation is appropriate for us to do so. So I don't think it has an impact on the paper industry as a whole. It would have, and it has no impact on what we're required to remit sales tax on.
Thanks.
Members, I think I haven't talked to the House yet about this, but I do think there's some urgency to get this issue resolved for our printing industry. So I guess I would suggest that we move this to the floor, Senator St. Jim, and have a discussion about whether we can allow this, even though it's a tax vehicle, to travel on its own without too much mischief on the floor for our printing industry. And I'll have that discussion with Senator Ortman. Senator Dibble, you want to move it?
Mr. Chair, only if I can call this the Dunder Mifflin Bill.
What?
I just thought of that joke a few minutes ago. I'm still laughing at it. I'll move it, Mr. Chair.
Senator Dibble moves Senate File 832 as amended be recommended to pass and sent to the floor. Any discussion? Not all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye.
Contrary, no. Motion prevails. Bill is passed. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Mr. Chair. Mr. Chairman.
Senator Pogelman.
I'm sorry I was out of the room for part of this. Is the department supportive of this or not?
Yes.
Is the department here?
Ms. Linda.
Mr. Rundquist, go ahead.
Mr. Chair, Linda Moser, Department of Revenue. We do support the bill.
Members, we now have Senate File 1054. 1054 is a repeal of the levy limits that are in place. And the reason I bring this to you is we made an agreement with the governor last year at the end of session to where the legislature agreed to levy limits for 3 years, and in exchange for that, there was an agreement reached for some additional local government aid and county program aid and some inflation on those two programs over the next 2 years. I don't want to speak for the cities, but I think would be fair to say they feel like the deal's been broken with the unallotment of the aids and credits back in December, and with the governor's budget proposal for additional reductions in not only aids and credits, but or not just LGA and county program aid, but also the market value credit. So, Mr. Carlson? And we have one small amendment. Let's get that on there. Members, I'm going to make it orally. On page 14, the back page, we have one reference that was not included in the draft.
The repealer.
This is on the A1 amendment. Well, let's speak to the bill first before we go to the A1.
Senator Carlson.
Or Mr. Carlson.
Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, my name is Gary Carlson. I'm with the League of Minnesota Cities. I'd like to actually turn it right over to our president, Mary Heyman Rowland, the mayor of Apple Valley, to talk about the levy limit issue, and I will try to fill in some voids on some of the technical details as well.
All right. Thank you. First of all, Chairman Bach and Senators, I want to thank you for giving us this time and Chairman Bach for understanding this issue. It's very important to us. My name is Mary Heyman Rowland, and I'm the mayor of Apple Valley and the president of the League of Minnesota Cities. Thank you again. One of the League's steadfast and overarching policy themes is that of local control. And one of the clearest examples of local control is for the ability of our councils to make decisions on behalf of their residents for their local taxes and the services they provide. As an elected mayor and as council, I am charged by our citizens to establish an annual budget and balance that for the public safety needs, transportation, economic development, parks and recreation, and other needs of our community. With a burden of levying a property tax to pay these services. This is an immense responsibility for every city council and mayor. And unfortunately, levy limits are clearly an assault on local control and the job that citizens of Apple Valley and the citizens of every other city in the state of Minnesota expect our local officials to perform. I sincerely appreciate your sensitivity to this, Senators and Chairman Bach, and I will turn it over to Mr. Carlson for the nuances of the levy limits. And I also want to recognize that we have with us the mayor of Eagan, Mike McGuire, and I think maybe, are you going to go first? Or?
Go ahead.
Okay. Thank you.
Maybe I'll testify before Kevin speaks. Mr. Chair and the committee, I'm always proud to say that I'm the mayor of Eagan, Minnesota. My name is Mike McGuire. I'm also the vice president of the Association of Metro Cities. I want to thank you all for having me here today and for all of the important work that you each do every day. I'm here today on behalf of Metro Cities to testify in support of Senate File 1054, repealing levy limits on local units of government. The City of Eagan and Metro Cities have consistently opposed levy limits as an undue and inappropriate limitation on local-level decision-making and budgeting. City officials are elected by their communities to make decisions that best reflect and serve the localized needs and desires of their constituents. We are routinely called on to justify those decisions, and citizens offer their feedback each and every election year, as they do you. As mayor, my council and I are also responsible to put together a budget and to make our community's priorities. When the state was not serving transportation needs of employers along Highway 149, Chair Bach, you're familiar, the community and the city council made a decision to prioritize it. No one in St. Paul was suggesting that we should be step back from making investments in a state highway. When we couldn't get state funding for a ring road to decongest one of the busiest intersections in Dakota County, no one else was suggesting that they would be accountable to the voters, but my colleagues and I on the City Council when we levied money for that project, for that infrastructure project, onto our taxpayers. We're best positioned to make these priorities and decisions, and while I believe that legislators should be in them as well, we're the ones who respond to those decisions and priorities every year in truth and taxation hearings. While our cities and metro cities have long been opposed to levy limits, unallotments and the general budget tumult makes these limits especially problematic, confusing, and cumbersome today. While the state deals with its own budget deficits, any number of local-level boogeymen have been constructed to either take the blame or take the hit, or both. In Eagan, We want to be a part of helping solve the budget deficit, but not at the cost of undoing our years of sound fiscal planning. The only budget deficits we have in Eagan are those created by unallotments in December. We have a cash flow accounts that mean that we can continue functioning even when we lose a paycheck through unallotment or something like that. We have dedicated funds for cost-effective infrastructure maintenance so that we don't have to cheat on that to cheat on that responsibility when fiscal fortunes turn down. We have fund reserves for rainy days on the local levels. Fund reserves that, if I'm not mistaken, don't exist in quite as healthy a measure here on the state level. Mr. Chair, you and your committee have a tough job with tough decisions, and I respect that. I simply ask that by supporting this bill, you respect the abilities and the commitment of locally elected officials and respect their work as well. Property taxes are our only tool. They are limited, but it is a tool that we use prudently and responsibly. And appreciate your time listening to me today.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Pat Hinchis. I'm Mankato City Manager and also a Board of Directors for the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities. Like the esteemed mayors here, this is a matter of local control. The issue facing Mankato is certainly one that many cities are facing. We are projected to have perhaps a 20% downturn in revenue with the combination of the recession, certainly the proposal by the governor for the reduction of local government aid, and also, generally speaking, we're going to have a downturn in our fees and charges within the general fund. The combination of losing cash last year through the unallotment to replace the LGA loss has eliminated our flexibility to utilize our reserves again this year and potentially next year. The levy limitations that are imposed will provide us really with a challenge in terms of trying to deal with the loss of aid, whatever that amount ultimately is, and certainly our ability to affect basic services. So the providing us local discretion to essentially plot our direction in terms of the levy is something that certainly our city council and elected officials throughout the state representing the coalition and certainly the League of Minnesota Cities would desire from the legislature. It is our local responsibility to set that levy and to certainly provide the services that our citizens require from our local officials.
Questions from the committee members on the levy limit portion of the bill?
Mr. Chair, from what I've heard, if you go back over the years when there was levy limits and there was not, taxes did not go up less when there was levy limits. So I think it's all very superficial. And I've never favored it, and this year we're going to have to take it off simply because of other things that we're going to be doing.
Sundrum, what was your experience in Rochester?
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry. When I don't recall that we had enough growth in Rochester so that. My recollection was we were never levying to the max, even with the limits. But we had that uniqueness. We had enough growth so that the formula allowed us to levy reasonably, but never to the max.
Are there comments on this part of the bill, members?
Well, Mr. Chair, I've seen the dramatic cuts to local government aid that Minneapolis has experienced, I think. Less than half proposed from what they qualified for just a few years ago. So, meanwhile, you know, Minneapolis is you know, doing all it can to maintain its good record on improving public safety and trying to keep its roads in good shape before they kind of flip over that turning point, which you have to completely rebuild the road. $9 million a mile. So, you know, if this dramatic cuts in LGA are going to persist, they've got to pay for the basic things that make that city operate.
Senator Dibble, I think we're going to hear from Minneapolis right now.
Mr. Chairman, you're going to hear from North Metropolitan Mayors. if I could.
I'm Bill Barnhart. I'm here on behalf of North Metropolitan Mayors. Last Wednesday night, the board of directors of the organization passed a resolution overtly, so there's no using a local control type of thing, requesting the repeal of levy limits. We thank you for the bill. I would like to comment on one thing that you brought up, the interaction with LGA and levy limits. Last year was quite a year on LGA. A lot of groups came to the table, and I think to the surprise of many, the unity proposal came forth. One of the upshots of that was in several cities who had not been receiving LGA came back on the formula, cities such as Brooklyn Park, Spring Lake Park, Circle Pines, all cities that a number of people felt had a lot of developing problems and deserved something. The result of the proposed cuts to the program is that every one of those cities will now exit the program, but they're still stuck with the levy limits. They don't have the money that they had finally thought they were going to be having for the first time in years. So we thank you for the bill and are very supportive of it.
Senator Sundrum.
Mr. Chair, I'm looking at the fiscal note on this, and I wonder if maybe the someone, perhaps Senate counsel or anyone else, might explain that third bullet where it talks about increasing property tax burden on homestead caused by increased levies will increase state-paid property tax refunds, and that goes on by 5.4, 7.7, and 4.7 in successive years. This thing here is that? I guess it's true, but is that the net effect of this that we increase state costs by that much money?
Senator Sundrum, I think what Department of Revenue is telling us is that if property taxes go up, there will be a larger payout of under the property tax refund program. I think what's interesting about the Department of Revenue sheet is in the governor's budget, and those of you who were here the day I asked the commissioner, what's the property tax impact of the governor's budget? And Commissioner Ines said, well, we don't have a hard number yet, but our assumption is that under the governor's budget that cities will levy back two-thirds of their lost LGA. And I think historically that's what the department has found. But what I find a little bit troubling is under the governor's budget where they cut LGA, they anticipated a two-thirds levy back. But under this bill where you get rid of levy limits, if you look at the note, they anticipate 100% levy back. So I think the number, and I'll have a discussion with the commissioner, why if under the governor's budget when they cut LGA they assume a two-thirds levy back, but now when we remove levy limits, the same department thinks there'll be 100% levy back. So I think if you go look at the historical data, there won't be 100% levy increase, that it'll be closer to two-thirds, but so I think this $5.4 million is probably a little high. But we'll have that discussion with them.
Thank you, Senator Bach, Chairman Bach, and Senator Sundrum. I just want you to know that in Apple Valley, we just recently had our goal-setting session, and we are very sensitive to the climate out there. We understand that, you know, our citizens are hurting, and sure. we don't want to add to that burden. But we also understand how important the services that they receive are. And if they were not to receive those services, life would get even tougher for our citizens in the city. If we delay things like our overlay, in essentially, if we continue to do that, it's going to cost our taxpayers more in the end. So we just really appreciate your sensitivity. I understand you've come from local government, and we thank you, Chairman Bach, for being the author or the senator of this bill. And we truly appreciate this, because it's something that we've consistently asked for but truly need today in this climate, in this economic climate.
Thank you. Anything else on the levy limit discussion, members?
Mr. Chair, going back to your point, though, at least you would believe that the real number is probably, for instance, two-thirds of $5.4 million that first year.
I think if you're going to be consistent with the way the department has scored LGA reductions or LGA increases in the past, two-thirds is probably a better number, but we'll try to get some clarification from the commissioner why this is being scored differently. Then it just doesn't seem consistent.
No.
Mr. Carlson, do you agree with me? Or am I off?
I'm sorry, say that again, Senator.
The fact that the department is assuming 100% levy back of the loss to LGA, does that seem rational? Is that consistent with previous events like this where LGA was lost? Is there really 100% levy back?
Mr. Chair and members, there truly is an impact on the circuit breaker and the renter's refund, or not on renters, on the circuit breaker. But what it is really up for speculation. I do know that a lot of our city councils realize they just cannot replace all of the lost aid with property taxes. I will tell you that point blank. That is not an option because they understand the financial uncertainty right now of these economic times. And I would suspect that it will be even harder for our cities with the current circumstances to do that. That's just point blank. I think what the department gives you is, as you indicate, probably a high-end estimate of what we might expect as an impact on the state general fund. Mr. Chair, if I could make just one other comment. Last year, you all were very accommodating in adjusting levy limits to allow us certain additional special levies for things like unallotment that I think many people thought we were kind of crazy to even raise last June when we put that in the tax bill. As well, there are special levies for police and fire salary and benefit and for some foreclosure costs. Let me just say to the committee, though, that those adjustments really were kind of band-aids to the levy limit problem, and we don't think that those really do accommodate all of the true needs of our communities out there and the circumstances that they face. In fact, just point blank on the issue, the 2009 cuts that have been proposed by the governor, if those were to cycle through the system, there would be no additional levy authority under levy limits for the 2009 LGA and MVHC cuts that are proposed by the governor. In addition, beyond 2009, the market value homestead credit cuts would not factor into the 2010 levy limits, so there would be no additional authority for those 150 cities under the governor's proposal that would lose MVHC in 2010. So there are problems with the underlying levy limits. You were very accommodating in adding things last year for those levy limits, but there's still a lot of major problems created by the levy limits, and we just ask for the repeal.
Members, the chair has the A1 amendment. Senator Sequoia moves to A1.
All right, let's get going here.
Members, we've heard a lot of discussion from cities and counties about all the mandates that we've imposed upon them. They sent us lists of, a number of them.
Not all of it, but some of it.
I committed to them that in December when they were here, that this wouldn't be the end of the maintenance of effort or the mandate discussion, that we continue to try to take a look at some of the things we require them to do and see if we can see if all of them still make sense, see if we can provide them some relief. The A1 amendment does three things. It removes the requirement of having to do truth and taxation hearings. You still would have to do the public notice, but there wouldn't be a requirement to have a hearing any longer. And it also includes the Marty bill, the publication requirement. And Senator Marty, maybe you can refresh my memory exactly how that works.
Sure. Mr. Chairman, if they listed properties in there and they had one listed incorrectly, they have to reprint the entire list in the legal notice. And that amendment would simply say they only have to address the corrected one. Newspapers were fine with it, and counties were very, very happy to get out of a lengthy list of reprinting stuff that had been accurate the first time.
And the third piece in the amendment, members, is under current law, people pay their property taxes in two installments. There is a provision in law that if your property tax obligation is less than $50, the payment is made in one installment. The third piece of the amendment changes that threshold to $250. So if your property tax obligation is less than $250, you'd be required to pay it in one installment rather than in two. So those are the three provisions of the amendment. They're I think, pretty small repeals of some mandates, but I think they're going in the right direction to help relieve some of the burden that we've put on cities. Would anybody like to comment on the A1?
Chairman Bach, I would just like to say, in terms of the truth in taxation, we appreciate that, but we also know that in cities like Apple Valley, and I'm sure Mayor City of Egan, we'll continue to do our truth in taxation hearings. We believe that that's good governance, and we want to be transparent. But we also understand the burden on other small cities. Mayor, would you like to say something?
Sherbrooke, I just to extend it, in Egan, even when there haven't been levy limits, we've always had the tradition of informally trying to follow what the levy limits would have been and measuring our own budget by what the levy limits would have been had they continued to be in place. And we've always had truth in taxation hearings annually, even though they weren't required by the increase in our levy. So,
Mr. Carlson?
Members, I'm Keith Carlson. I'm Executive Director of the Minnesota Intercounty Association. And I'm here to speak in support of the amendment. The truth in taxation, elimination of the truth in taxation hearing would be a small step in reducing some administrative burden and cost, approximately $200,000 to $300,000. Annually for those local governments that have to hold those hearings right now in terms of staff time. We were hopeful that you were also going to eliminate the published notice because the information on there is really, frankly, redundant to the individual notice that all taxpayers receive, but apparently you've decided not to do that. Certainly appreciative of the steps that you've taken to reduce some of the mandates by also including the Marty bill and changing the threshold for semi-annual payments. I do want to also comment on the levy limits. We're also appreciative that you are repealing them. One thing that I don't think the committee is aware of, with the new inflation estimates, the inflation adjustment that we receive for taxes payable in 2010 will now be 1.2%, not the 3.9% that I believe the conference committee and the legislature as a whole was laboring under at the time that the bill was adopted last May. For taxes payable in 2011, the inflation adjustment is now projected to be 0.5%, again, not the 3.9%. And I'll just further comment, Senator Senjum mentioned that the city of Rochester was able to get by on the adjustments provided for household growth and commercial industrial property growth. Those have been cut in half by the law that was enacted last year from what was the previous adjustments. You used to get 100% of the growth in the number of households. It's now 50%, and the same is true for the commercial industrial growth factor. It used to be 100%. It's now 50% for the next 3 years. So all those combined to make it a very, frankly, untenable situation for both the counties and cities subject to levy limits.
Mr. Mayor?
I did just want to add one quick thought on the truth in taxation hearings. We'd continue to have them in Egan, I assume, even if they weren't required. I will suggest, while I have no delusions that it would actually happen, Having sat through a number of truth and taxation hearings for the city of Eagan, one of the things I've noted is we spend more of our time answering questions about state legislation and state tax policy than we do our local budget in truth and taxation. And I've always thought that if there were going to be required truth and taxation hearings, that legislators should be required to attend them and be able to answer those questions as well. I doubt that it would happen, but I'll make it as a humble suggestion.
Mr. Mayor, we're going in the wrong direction. Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe Senate Counsel could remind me, how did we create those truth and taxation requirements?
Keith, write that.
Mr.
Carlson?
Was
the truth in taxation, or are you the one that wrote that?
Mr. Chairman, I participated with House staff and the Department of Revenue in putting together the truth in taxation legislation as we currently know it. There was a desire by the legislature at the time to shift from a notice of budget increases our levy increases to the parcel-specific system that we know at this time, and it includes all the elements of the current law, including the separate publication of the hearing and the hearing requirements.
Senator Johnson, that help?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would be happy to get rid of those also.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Pogemon.
How about the publication one? Did we just decide we didn't want every small town newspaper mad at the legislature?
We thought that that made the bill pretty controversial, Senator Fogelmeyer. Not that we couldn't consider it or that the Rules Committee might consider it or we may consider it on the floor. That is, I think, what was requested on behalf of local governments, though.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Pogemeyer.
What if I made an amendment to do that right now and let's see what happens?
Probably saves a lot of additional money at the local level. Also, could that be done orally?
Mr. Chairman, you could certainly direct me to draft the amendment and we could have that ready, have that incorporated in the committee report. So it would be reported out. We would be probably repealing subdivision 5A of Minnesota statute section 275065, and there might be other references to that provision in other places in the statutes, and I'd make sure that got taken care of consistently.
Would so move.
Discussion, members, on the Pogemeyer Amendment to remove from law the publication requirements under truth in taxation, which is in addition to the requirement already in the amendment that the hearing not be held. Senator Johnson.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Pogemiller, would you like to expand it to include the truth in taxation hearings?
It's already in there. That's already in there.
Senator Johnson, that's already in the amendment.
Perfect.
The elimination of the hearing, required hearing, is in the amendment. Senator Pogemiller's amendment is to include in that to delete the requirement that they put a publication of what the how's that worded?
Mr. Chairman, that's a public advertisement requirement in the truth in taxation section.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Pogemon.
As I understand it, there is individual parcel mailings.
Right.
And so I think anybody affected is getting a notice in the mail. And perhaps would a 2-year suspension be a little easier on people?
Mr. Chair. Senator Squay.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Pogemiller, I actually have drafted or I'm not exactly sure where it is in the process, a bill that addresses some of this. Some of the things that we've been working on as we think about these publication requirements is how counties or cities can utilize the web to replace some of the print. We've also had some discussions about what some of the really small communities would do to replace the print requirement. So while overall I'm supportive of what you're trying to do, I think there are needed discussions to figure out if there's some alternatives. And, you know, maybe we can put this on and continue that part of the discussion. But there are other things that we can do that are, you know, get notice out there, but less costly.
Senator Pogelman.
Chairman, I would move to
suspend
publication for 2 years.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm in agreement with Senator Pogelman because my individual tax statement is quite detailed. It actually shows prior year and current suggestion. You get that pre-mailer that says we're going to do this, and if you have comment, you know, you get a chance to comment before the actual printing. So you actually get two. You get a pre-statement, and then you get your statement.
Yeah, it doesn't change the information that people have. They still have the information. Senator Sundrum.
Mr. Chair, I'm trying to recall what this amendment's about in terms of the notice. You know, we all got a little card that says these are your taxes. Now, is the notice the thing that's in the paper?
Yes.
A week or two ahead of time that says on such and such a night there's going to be such and such?
There's two different things. Counsel?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Sundrum, there are actually kind of three main parts to the Truth in Taxation statute. The first is that individual property owners will get notices addressed to with respect to each property. Then there's also a publication requirement in the newspaper that has a great deal of detail about the property tax impacts and processes, and then there is the public hearing.
Right. Mr. Chair, and does the newspaper, I don't remember all that great detail, but I think I do remember that it says at such and such a day, at such and such a time, there's going to be a truth in taxation hearing. That's what I remember about the notice. And is that what we're talking about here in terms of eliminating?
Right. Mr. Chairman, Senator Sundrum, there's quite a lengthy, actually the subdivision that deals with the public advertisement runs for 2.5 pages in the statute. So it does provide information about the hearing and then also lists budget amounts, and there's quite a bit of information that's required for each of the taxing jurisdictions that's subject to truth in taxation.
Senator Pogelman, you realize we're going to get some bad editorials.
Well, I think, Mr. Chairman, that's why I think a 2-year suspension might focus people's minds on some of the challenges facing the state.
On the Pogelman oral amendment for a 2-year suspension of the publication requirements required under truth in taxation, and we will trust counsel to get that language into the committee report. Any other discussion?
Madam Chair. I don't understand this. Mr. Chair, I'm in too many committees where the chair is a woman, I guess. And that's fine. They're wonderful.
I don't think we have another 300-pound one in the
Of either gender.
Mr. Chair, what I'm wondering, and it just feels like, and as Senator Pogelman's pointed out, that we're at difficult times here, times of great state challenge, and it just seems to me when you have times of great state challenge, it's important not to, if you will, disassociate ourselves with our citizenry, but to bring our citizenry together. And so the notion of eliminating truth in taxation hearings and even public notices, which basically say, come talk to us, we are your government, you are our citizens, that's an important element, I think, within our democracy that I fear as we go down this path that we're going to lose. Now, certainly there are indications here that, yeah, we'll continue the hearings, and maybe we will for the first 4, 5, 10 years, but going on, I think we have a culture here which of at least annual participation by citizens in their government that's important, and I just fear that that we'll lose that. I think it, as I as a city council member for 11 years actually appreciated those evenings. Yeah, sometimes they were hard, but I think it is an opportunity at least one time a year where the citizens can come and really tell us what they think about what's going on in their community.
This is the mail notice, and that requires them to make notice of the regular meetings.
Senator Sundrum, if you look at the top of page 2, to come and participate, tells them when the regularly scheduled meetings, when the budget and levy are going to be discussed. What we're talking about is just getting rid of a special meeting to do that. They're still going to get, under the amendment, a notice telling them to come to the regularly scheduled meeting, that it's just, we're not going to have a special meeting for that purpose, that frankly most times very few people come to, but there's a real cost statewide among all our local units of government having to conduct those meetings with that special order of business.
Chairman Bach, the notice that goes out for your taxes does include the date and the time of when the truth and taxation hearing is going to be. So it already does indicate that already. And what I would like to suggest to you is that we believe in good governance and we believe in transparency, and you're going to see cities that can afford to do this will do it, and I think that most cities will make that effort because they believe that their citizens deserve that information. But essentially it's not mandated by the state. It's allowing us to be able to make the best decisions for our citizens.
So Senator Sundrum, the language replaces the notice of the special meeting with the notice has the information about the regularly scheduled meetings for people to attend an already scheduled meeting rather than a
special
meeting just on the subject of truth and taxation. So I don't think that we're trying to discourage people from attending. We're just asking them to come to a different meeting to do it rather than a special one for that purpose.
Yes, sir.
Senator Johnson?
And Mr. Chairman, along that same line, a citizenry can attend any commissioner board meeting, any city council meeting. There is opportunity for input in every single one of those public meetings.
Mm-hmm. Senator Sundrum?
Mr. Chair, as I read lines 2-2 to 2-7, yeah, it certainly does talk about, you know, a meeting, but I think it does not mention at all that it's a hearing. It's a come and frankly watch it be discussed. Now I was on a city council. If you have, I understand if people come, we're going to generally let them speak. But that's not in the statute, and at least in the proposed language here. And I just think we're taking something fundamentally important away from our democracy if we. In our governmental culture and our citizen culture of our citizenry, if we do this, but let's just have the debate and we'll see how it goes.
Senator Sundrum, the chair's thought is that we'd send this to the Rules Committee. So if you want to work on, you know, some language that further refines those lines 2.2 to 2.7, where they have a special order of business or something or some opportunity specifically for the public to comment, maybe some special order of business at the regular meeting might be accomplished the same thing as a special meeting. If you want to consider that between now and rules, I think that would be worth
it. Mr. Chair, I think, and I'll defer to anybody else that has similar experience, but my smaller cities typically, I think, incorporate their truth and taxation hearings within the framework of an existing meeting.
We have it separate.
Mr. Carlson, don't we tell them when they have to hold it?
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Sundrum, yes. The meeting for truth and taxation is specifically identified, and the only thing they can do at that hearing is receive public testimony. The council, the board cannot even take action to adopt their budget or levy at that meeting. They have to take action at a subsequent meeting. Under the state of current law.
Ms. Chair, would it not be permissible, though, for a unit of government to adjourn their regular meeting, move into a Truth and Taxation Committee, pardon me, a Truth and Taxation meeting?
Mr. Chairman, members, it's, I suppose, conceivable that they could possibly do that, but it is at a specific designated time. It
right.
has to be in the evening. That may or may not be in sync with their usual meeting times. Specifically for counties, it is never in sync with our meeting time because it's on Thursdays. Tuesdays are the days that county boards meet.
Yep.
So it's never in sync for counties. It, I suppose it's possible, but it's the exception rather than the rule that it would be done in conjunction with a regular meeting of a city council or a school board.
Mayor McGuire. Mr. Chair, again, respecting that Rochester may do things differently. I know in Eagan, we schedule Truth and Taxation hearings every December on a Monday. Our council meetings are usually on a Tuesday. What we find ourselves doing is rescheduling either the regular or the workshop meeting that's scheduled on a Tuesday to a Monday, but referring items from the Truth and Taxation hearing to a future meeting that's not on that same night. So it would seem to me that along the lines of the chair's suggestion, that the statute could be changed simply to rule out having to schedule a separate Truth and Taxation hearing and instead incorporate it within to an already existing opportunity for the council to do business.
Maybe just in a larger city like Rochester, yeah, it's clearly the Truth and Taxation. That's, I'm talking about the smaller cities that typically, frankly, don't get the audience at these things. I think they do tend to incorporate them if they can into the same evening.
On the Pogemiller oral amendment to delete the publication or to suspend the publication requirements for 2 years. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Contrary, no?
No.
Motion prevails. There is one other oral amendment that council has. Council?
Mr. Chair, members, this would be an amendment to the amendment on page 14, line 10. We're adding another section to be repealed. There's a section 275.75 that was a part of the levy limits laws, and that is obsolete. It referred to overriding local charters for taxes payable in 2004 and 2005, and it seems like it'd be consistent to repeal that along with the other levy limit repealers.
Something else?
Yeah, in the bill.
So the chair moves that oral amendment on line 14.10 after the last, no, before the last comma, insert and 275.75.
You delete the and.
Oh, we delete the and in front of two. Delete the and in front of 275.74, and after 0.74, insert semicolon and 275.75. On the oral amendment, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no. Motion prevails. The amendment's adopted. And then one other oral amendment on the bill.
Mr. Chairman and members, in the bill on page 5, an amendment to Section 3, which has to do with reports on taxes that are levied. It was suggested to me that the language in the bill went too far, that some of these particular categories of reporting should be maintained because they're used to predict changes in property taxes. So the amendment to the bill would be on lines 12 through 19, reinstate the stricken language on line 12, delete all purposes, and on line 16, after in, which is now reinstated, insert Minnesota statutes section, Minnesota statutes, and then after section, insert 2008, and that has the effect. That's on page 5, line 16. That would have the effect of referring to the existing Section 275-70 Subdivision 5, which will be repealed in this, but it'll maintain that reference for the purpose of developing these reports.
Chair moves Council's oral amendment. All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Contrary, no. Motion prevails. On Senate file 1054, as amended. Senator Devil.
Did we vote on the A1, the full A1 amendment?
Oh, we haven't adopted the A1. Senator Skoy moves the A1 as amended. All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Contrary, no.
No.
Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. Thank you, Senator Devil. Chair moves Senate file 1054 as amended be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Rules. Any other discussion? This is our effort at our small effort, the Tax Committee's effort at repealing some mandates on local government. Senator Rest.
Mr. Chairman, what occasion is the bill to go to Rules? Other than the
Senator Pogman?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Rest, we're having all the committees that are doing mandate repeals. Right. We're sending it to Rules, and we're going to put them all in one bill.
Yes. Okay. I'm sorry.
Senate File 3.
Yep. We're doing it.
Senator.
Mr. Chair, I clearly came here today supportive of lifting those levy limits. Deals have been broken, and we ought to do that. I'm finding myself in a lot more difficulty now relative to the truth of taxation hearings. I just think they're a fundamental core part of our Minnesota democracy, and we ought to continue to do those. I think they're a valuable part of citizen input.
Well, Senator Centrum, I just would encourage you to think about some language between now and Rules then that would create at a regularly scheduled meeting some special order of business or something. I certainly would be willing to entertain that. Any other discussion? Senator Ortman.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to say I just came from the city of Chanhassen where we talked about their legislative priorities. This is one of their highest priorities, and all the communities in my district agree, and I think most across the state do, that they, residents, look to their cities to be leaders and their elected officials to be leaders and to manage their budget. And I think that the state has interfered with that critical relationship between the taxpayers and the representatives that they elect to look after their city's budget. And so with that, I support this. And I hope that we will continue to look at maintenance of effort issues and unfunded mandates. And I, for one, will renew my efforts to do that and hopefully meet this bill in committee when it gets to the next level and work on some of those amendments. So, Mr. Chair, I appreciate your effort here.
Any other discussion, members? If not, on the motion to send Senate File 1054 as amended to the Rules Committee. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Contrary, no.
Nope.
The motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Senators. And we just want you to know that city governments do want to do good governance. We want to be transparent. We will continue to be that way. It just allows us to have the authority. Thank you.
Thank you. Members, tomorrow we are going to have a discussion on the February forecast. We're going to have finance and our state economist in. So 9 o'clock tomorrow morning. Until then, this committee is adjourned.